Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today my guest, Jennifer Crystal, she of course is a Lyme conqueror. So I'm so excited to hear her personal journey, which she initially was actually going to be a ski instructor, but of course health had other plans for her. But she also wears many hats. She has a Master of Fine Arts. She's a writer. She helps others write. She has a program called Writing to Heal, which sounds phenomenal. She's written many inserts and also published her own book, One Tick Stopped the Clock. Love that name. Such a true statement. And all of her book sales, 10% of the proceeds go to Global Lyme Alliance, which I love. Speaking of Global Lyme Alliance, since 2013, she has written a weekly column for them. I know she's written for LymeDisease.org as well. She does a lot of writing. If you're not familiar with Global Lyme Alliance, they are a nonprofit organization dedicated to conquering Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses. Through their mission, they do innovative research, awareness, and empowering patient voices. And if you're a brand new listener to my podcast or don't know what my mission is for this podcast, it's all about hope and inspiration. And so we're going to dive right into Jennifer's personal Lyme journey because I want you to take away just that, the hope and inspiration that you too can beat this disease. And then we're going to touch on a lot of the other topics that I just mentioned towards the end of the show. So be sure to tune in. I'm so excited to welcome you to the show, Jennifer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for having me.
Absolutely. So where do we start? It's kind of your journey. So where do you want to start it at?
That's always a hard thing to figure out, right?
It really is, right? We never know.
But my Lyme journey began when I was 19, though I didn't know it yet at the time. And I write about this in the book, but I was working as a summer camp counselor in Maine in the woods, and I had a mysterious red rash on my arm and didn't think much of it at the time. The camp nurse didn't think much of it at the time. It was 1997. Lyme disease wasn't really on our radar. Even though I had grown up in Connecticut, where Lyme began, Lyme, Connecticut, but it wasn't on my own radar. And very long story short, I went undiagnosed for 8 years, and I had waxing and waning symptoms that just were getting worse and worse. And in 2003, I was living out in Colorado after having graduated from college, and my dream had always been to be a ski instructor in Colorado. And right on the precipice of beginning that job, I got mono, which just overtaxed my immune system. And ultimately, we would find out a couple of years later that I was not able to get better from mono because I had these underlying tick-borne infections. But I became totally bedridden, had to give up the dream of ski instructing, give up my independence, and the journey goes on from there. But that's really where it began, was when I was 19, and then when I was 25, ultimately getting diagnosed, and then goes on from there.
Wow, that is just crazy that living in Connecticut, right, that it wasn't even on your radar, and of course, nobody else's radar. And, you know, as you know, I'm sure not many of us actually get that bullseye rash or any type of a rash from a tick bite. And so, like you, myself, I got a bullseye rash, but I didn't even know what Lyme disease was. So it meant nothing to me, right? So it's just horrible. And that's, you know, if we can just educate one person on, if you're the lucky one that gets the rash, like, you've been infected, right? Like, let's figure out what you need to do, because it will either take you down now or it'll take you down later, right? And then at least you're educated and you kind of know how to move forward. So that's such an important piece of of, you know, what we both do is just educating on what this illness is and what it can do to us. So, wow, yeah. So you went undiagnosed for 8 years, and it probably was the reason, like you said, that you couldn't get rid of the mono. Did you have other like random things during that 8 years kind of going on?
I did. So over the time, I seemed to always be getting sick. I would have an on and off flu. It happened a lot when I was in college. The health center nurses sort of tired of me always coming with the fever and the flu, and they would always test me for mono, which I didn't have in college. And after a while, they said, you know, maybe you should see someone in counseling about all of this, because we just couldn't figure out any physical reason, or wasn't fitting into any easy diagnostic box for what was wrong. But in addition to always having an on and off flu, I just seemed very susceptible to bronchitis, ear infections. Once I moved out to Colorado, I started developing severe migraines, which were blamed on altitude sickness. I started developing systemic hives, my nerves, my hands started shaking. So I started having some neuropathy. So there were lots of various symptoms that are all tick-borne illness symptoms, but I didn't know that at the time. And they were sort of building and building and all looked at separately by doctors, but never put together until I was ultimately diagnosed. And then we were able to trace everything together and trace it all back to that rash in the summer of 1997.
Yeah, and I hear it so often from my guests that, like you said at the beginning, we don't really know where our story starts, right? Because it takes a long time, oftentimes, to get our diagnosis. So hindsight, when we kind of look back on it, we're like, now it all makes sense, right? Like I wasn't just this problem child with, you know, whether it be like ADD tendencies or whatever it may be, because as we know, Lyme causes so many different random symptoms. So they can all be kind of tied back to that. So what did something specifically provoke you at this 8 year mark to go in and get tested for Lyme, or was it a practitioner that kind of brought it up, or how did that play out?
So I had been diagnosed with mono, which was an accurate diagnosis. I did have mono, and it did slip into chronic active Epstein-Barr virus, which I wasn't able to shake. But after 2 years, it was really feeling like I should be getting somewhat better by now. I was seeing a naturopathic physician. He was doing acupuncture, Chinese herbs, dietary changes, and he too was frustrated that I wasn't getting any better. And one day, I write about this in the book, I was drying my hair, which it was unusual for me because I was often so fatigued, my joints ached, that a simple act of drying my hair took a lot of energy for me. But on this particular day, I happened to be drying my hair. And in doing so, my elbows were up because I was holding the dryer and I could see my elbows in the mirror, and there were bullseye rashes on either elbow.
Wow.
And at this point, I had gotten so used to writing my symptoms off, because that's what doctors had done to me. So I went to the naturopathic physician and I said, you know, maybe I was leaning on my elbows funny or something. And he said, no, those look like the rashes of Lyme disease, an EM rash. And he said, you know, I've been feeling like there's some underlying infection. This seems like something out of my wheelhouse. I think that you should see a Lyme specialist. And so I'm very grateful to that doctor for having the humility to say this is something out of his wheelhouse, you know, and sending me elsewhere.
And even though you're trying to dismiss it off, right?
Right.
He's
right.
Like, no, there's something going on here.
Right. Exactly. So we sort of switched positions there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I went to a Lyme literate medical doctor, and I was clinically diagnosed with Lyme disease, babesiosis. And I tested CDC positive on a Western blot for Lyme, babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, with suspicion of Bartonella as well.
Wow. So you kind of had a handful of them. And unfortunately, most of us do. So you meet your Lyme literate doctor. He gives you this diagnosis. And then where did things go? How what did your kind of treatment protocol look like?
So it was interesting. I talk about in the book, when I finally did get the diagnosis, I was so excited because I thought, wow, Lyme is a bacterial infection. It can be treated. We're going to have medicine for it. So I write this scene in the book where, you know, I wanted to go on the rooftops and shout to the world, hey, world, guess what? I have Lyme disease. But of course, I didn't know what that
really. Little did we know. We do. I think it's kind of a natural response after all these years of doctors not being able to figure out what's wrong with us, or like your counselor telling you, you know, maybe you need some therapy or whatever it is that we've been gaslit with for years. And then we finally have something concrete that we actually have. We get really, really excited until we kind of know what it is. And then we're like, ooh, could it have been anything but that?
Right. Once I understood what it meant to have long-term Lyme disease, late-stage Lyme disease that had, in fact, crossed the blood-brain barrier, gotten into my central nervous system, became very difficult to treat, was, you know, complicated by co-infections. So I didn't know what any of that meant. I had never heard the word babesia or babesiosis then, or co-infection. These was blood-brain barrier. All of those terms were new to me. So I feel like, you know, I sort of got my medical degree, not really, but it felt like that as I was going along in this journey. But in terms of treatment, we began with oral antibiotics. I did that for 3 months. We then switched to IV antibiotics, which I was on for 9 months. And I also was doing a lot of nutritional supplements. What I really appreciated about my doctor is that he treated with the heavy Western medicine, but also was really looking holistically at the body of, you know, where are their nutritional deficits? What vitamins, where can, do we need? How has the immune system been compromised by all of this? How can we boost the immune system? So I was doing all of that. But really, it was the 9 months of antibiotics. And eventually got well enough to a point where I was declared in remission. And I really didn't understand fully yet what that meant in terms of Lyme being a relapsing disease and that it could come back. Really what it meant to have a chronic illness. And so I sort of felt I would, certainly wasn't as well as I once had been. I was not yet back on my skis, but I was a lot better. And so I sort of felt like, okay, we're done with this. We're done with Lyme. We're done, you know, and dove way too quickly back into my independent working life. And spoiler alert, relapsed completely within 3 months. And because I didn't have any defenses in my system, we had gone off medication entirely. And it took another couple of years of oral antibiotic treatment to get back to that baseline. And thankfully, I have been in remission now for over a decade and have gotten better and better and better by staying on low-dose medication, doing adjunct therapies, and really, most importantly, accepting what it is to have a relapsing illness, not in a way that is giving into it, but alternatively, thinking about how that illness is part of my life, doesn't define my life, but how do I live my life well in the context of it? And what do I need to do? How do I need to take care of myself in order to keep getting better, keep moving forward, and recognizing that I have this illness in my body and there are things I can do to help it not relapse, even though I can't control the infections, but I can control the environment in which they live. So it was, you know, really took a more holistic understanding of my own healing and my own health, my own body, for me to really start getting well, in the sense of staying in remission and getting better and better.
Yeah. And I hate that you had to experience that relapse, right? But I think it's really important for the listeners to understand that because yes, most of us go chronic Lyme, right? Because we can't get a diagnosis in time. And so now we're chronic and there are, you know, different talks from different practitioners. Some think that you can completely heal. Some think it goes in remission. So whatever it is, right? It's in our body. It's something that we need to work on. But the biggest thing is that we don't want to live in fear. You know, I hear of so many people that just kind of wrap up in, you know, bubble wrap, so to say, and they don't want to go hiking. They don't want to overexert their body. They don't want to get off their strict diet. They don't, all these things. And I just think that that's living in fear. And like you mentioned, We learn so much about our own body. And honestly, that was one of the biggest blessings. I have many blessings from my Lyme disease journey, but that was one of the biggest ones, is that you really get in tune with your own body. And like you mentioned earlier, you feel like, you know, a doctor or a pharmacist or a therapist, because we kind of have to do all that during our journey, being our own advocate. And so by getting in touch with your body and in tune with your body, I too believe that if you keep a strong terrain or a strong foundation, whatever it is you want to call it, you're not going to allow pathogens to run wild in your body, right? And we learn the tools that we need and things that we can do to continue to stay well. So yay, congratulations on over a decade in remission. That is fabulous. I'm pushing just about 4.5 years, and it's just, there's no better feeling, right? And I'm not afraid, and it doesn't sound like you are either. We're just very smart. We're very aware what's going on. We're aware with signs and symptoms. Our bodies are amazing. I mean, they truly just are. And when we have a symptom of something that is persistent, right, we don't ignore it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, you know, at first I always was really scared of relapsing again because it was so terrible. But I ultimately realized that I had gained the tools to recognize, you know, smaller flares, to recognize what was happening, to nip things in the bud, to call the doctor in time, to make changes myself, to slow down, to pace myself, all of these things. So we do, we become smarter and smarter about our own bodies and about what, you know, we, and about listening to them when they speak up. And that helps lead us out of a place of fear. And same for spending time outside. And this is what I tell people. I have written for, I worked on the Lyme Wellness Initiative at Harvard Health Publishing. We created a website with information about Lyme disease for the general public and for Lyme disease patients. And in the info for the general public, what we really wanted to focus on and what I focus on in my own writing is it's not about being afraid of going outside, but how can you go outside safely and be smart about it and enjoy, just enjoy the outdoors safely. So there are easy preventative measures that can be taken that I did not know to take back in 1997. And would I have protected a tick bite? I don't know. It's hard to say, you know, but I do know now that I take preventative measures, and that allows me to enjoy the outdoors safely. Am I still nervous about chicks? Of course. Am I nervous about them for everyone else? Of course. When I see pictures on social media of people hiking in the woods, it's always me who writes hashtag tick check underneath, right? Because I don't want people to wind up in my situation. There definitely, you know, are ways to take care of ourselves, to be aware, to be vigilant, to protect ourselves so that we can enjoy the outdoors safely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's normal for us to kind of have that fear. You know, I think going through a Lyme journey, I oftentimes say that it's almost like going through a grieving process, mm-hmm. because we grieve, you know, who we used to be, the finances that we've lost because of the illness, the relationships a lot of times that we've lost, who am I going to be now? What am I? All of that. And that is just goes to show that there are so many layers to treating this disease that you really have to uncover and deal with. I say either early on or later on in the journey, wherever it is, but you need to deal with it. And part of it is that emotional aspect of it, kind of that PTSD that gets triggered in our body because of it. And like you said, yeah, when I see a tick, I'm like, ooh, you know, I don't want to be around that. But it doesn't trigger any type of response in my body, right? And I think that that is because I've done the emotional healing that I needed to not live in fear. And like you said, we have the tools, we know what to do, and we're always going to continue to share our voice to educate others, tick checks, you know, the things that we need to do. But I really think that that emotional side of this is such an important piece. You know, many times people think, let me just go in and kill it. Right. And then some people think detox is good. Well, I personally think detox is just as important, if not more important than killing. And then just that whole emotional part of the journey that we went through, we really have to kind of dive into it and break it down and analyze it and work through those emotions in order to be able to truly stay well and not live in fear.
Absolutely. That's all really well said. I completely agree. And it is very much like the grieving process. We go through the steps of healing, of grieving, you know, towards healing. And as I say to my Writing to Heal students, it's not a linear process. We wish it were, right? That you could, okay, now I've done anger, I'm done with that. Now I've done sadness, I'm done with that. But that's not how it works. But we're ever moving through the process. And in doing so, we're moving forward. So it's a non-linear path. It circles back upon itself. Different emotions are going to come up. Different things are going to trigger us. We're going to have flare-ups of symptoms. But what I really had to learn for myself to get out of fear, and what I try to impart on others, is that when you slip backwards a little, it does not mean you've gone all the way back to the beginning. All of that progress that you have made is still there. And you're just circling back a little bit, but it's all part of the forward motion, ultimately, of healing.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I hear that oftentimes too. Oh my gosh, I thought I was, you know, seeing the door to remission, and then bam, I got knocked back down. But like you said, you haven't reversed everything that you've done, right? This is kind of the cycle of it. It's almost like that hamster wheel that you go around and round for, you know, oftentimes many years, until you just continue to take those steps forward. But that's part of the journey. And that's why I think it's so important to have a positive mindset during this journey. And we need to celebrate every single win, right? Sometimes people forget the little ones, but it's when you're in this phase, you've just got knocked back down, right? You think, oh, now I'm starting all over. No, you're not. Remind yourself of the things that you didn't have this time last year, right? And focus on those instead of being hyper-focused on what you still have or what you just fell back into. It's a huge, our mind is incredible. And it's such a huge part of this journey. If we can set our mind where it needs to be, I'm telling you, I think it can make such a quicker journey to getting well.
Absolutely. I feel like for the first few years, all I talked about was I want to get better. I want to get back to life. I want to get back on track. And I was so hard on myself in all the ways that I couldn't do that, and all the different things that would happen, and always blaming myself. And part of moving forward, not getting back after the relapse, was giving myself some grace and recognizing I didn't necessarily have control over what the infections were doing. And that I was working really hard, and I had done a lot of really good things to help myself. And so just speaking nicely to myself made a big difference, and celebrating the wins rather than focusing on the losses also made a really big difference. And that doesn't mean I don't want listeners to think, oh, you have to have a positive mindset all the time, or it's mind over matter, because it's not. It's just a sort of a reframing of, how can we focus on what is going well, what I have done, what I have gained, and still take time to process and grieve all that has been lost. I think, recognizing and accepting those difficult emotions, anger and frustration and sadness and grief, and allowing that to be part of the journey, to not be Pollyanna about it and not feel like you have to say, oh, but it could be worse, or I'm doing, just allowing yourself to grieve those aspects of your life, I think, is really an important part of the journey.
So much so. I love everything that you just said. Let me see if I can remember what I wanted to touch on. The biggest one is grace. We've got to give ourselves grace. I mean, we're going through a tough journey, and I always say that those that go through this journey, I mean, we're the toughest of the tough. Mm-hmm. And I just think that we are, because it's truly a difficult journey to go through. And by giving yourself grace, you need to allow yourself to go through those emotions and have those feelings, because I think that that is part of healing that emotional side of this journey as well. And yeah, we don't want it to all sound like roses. Yes, we need to have the perfect attitude all the time, right? We all have our faults. None of us are perfect. It's human nature that we're going to have those bad days, right? But just don't stay stuck there.
Right.
The next day, put your big boy pants on, big girl panties on, and start fighting again. And a friend of mine that I've met through this journey. I've had him on my podcast a couple of times over the last 4 years, and he talks about his journey, but he talks about just the mindset, and he taught me something that was even, you know, after I got well, I kind of wished I would have known it back then. But what he says, and I use it all the time because I think it's just a fabulous thing to think, is that when you wake up and you're having a bad day, right, and you're having all those extra pains, and you, your brain is not working today, and you didn't sleep, and, you know, all the things are going against you, instead of having a bad day, why don't you tell yourself, okay, my body is doing all these extra things and giving off all these extra signals because I'm doing some extra healing today. And I just love how he kind of turned that whole mindset around in that and look at it that way, right? Because if you wake up and, oh, I'm going to have a bad day, you just are going to have a bad day, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we don't want you to be perfect all the time, but I just think that the mindset, positive thoughts, we are what we think, right? So it really is an important part of the journey, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And that's a great lesson that your friend was able to impart on you. And, you know, going along with that, a lesson that I had to learn is that rest is productive. You know, I think as part of society just sort of always have this message that we're supposed to be productive. We're supposed to be doing something. We're supposed to be succeeding at something, earning something, achieving something all the time. And so to me, it felt really lazy to just be resting when that's what my body needed. But I ultimately had to learn that that is productive in itself, giving my body the space that it needed to heal. Just as your friend said, you know, like your body is giving signals that it needs time and space to heal right now. And it's working really hard to do that. So recognizing that that is productive, that's really hard work, the work of healing.
It is. And that was such a good point because we already feel, you know, everybody's journey is so much alike, but yet so differently. Some of us have family, some of us, you know, don't, whatever the scenario may be. But a lot of times we already feel so useless, right? Or so worthless going through this journey. And then if we're also thinking that we're being lazy as well, like that's just kind of a double whammy, right? And it is such an important thing is our body tells us when to rest, right? We need to listen to it. If we don't rest, if we don't sleep, our body doesn't have that capability, that time to actually repair itself. I mean, we can't function without sleep. And when we are dealing with any type of a chronic illness, we've got to rest. That is truly self-care. You are taking care of yourself when you do that.
Absolutely. Yes.
So let's kind of go back a little bit to your treatment plan. So you did the oral IV and then the IV antibiotics, and then you even did that the second time around. And you said that that was kind of like your key piece to it, which is fabulous because I don't hear that often. And I'm not a big fan of antibiotics, especially with chronic Lyme, but especially as the first option, right? Try some other things and then have it be another option is, you know, my personal thoughts on it, but I'm so happy that it worked for you. What were some of the other things that you did during this, like ways to support your body or detox, or can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. So sticking to what's sometimes called the Lyme diet, so an anti-inflammatory diet for me, that was eliminating gluten and sugar, which I still stick to. I low sugar now, but I am completely off of gluten. And that's made a really big difference in inflammation in my body and also in being able to tolerate antibiotics and having good gut bacteria. So that's worked really well. I've done some adjunct therapies. One that's been really helpful all along is integrative manual therapy, which incorporates cranial sacral therapy, neurofascial release. I say to people in layman's terms, it's sort of like acupuncture without the needles. It's a hands-on technique. And that's really, really helped my, I've also done neurofeedback, which is a non-invasive, technique to help the brain reset itself the same way that biofeedback works. Neurofeedback uses the brain's own feedback to learn to work at its best. And so I worked with a sleep doctor. Insomnia was one of my worst symptoms. And then when I did sleep, having hallucinogenic nightmares, and no matter what medications we were using, we could not calm it down. And neurofeedback really, really changed that for me. In addition to medication. So that has been really important. The integrative manual therapy, I still do. The neurofeedback I did for a very long time. Physical therapy, when I was able, once I was physically able to do that, was helpful. Talk therapy, finding a therapist who had worked with chronic illness patients before, all of those things made a really big difference and continue to make a big difference.
Yeah. And that is therapy of all sorts, you know, whether it's talk therapy or, you know, I hear a lot of positive things about cranial sacra, which was a great explanation. I've never heard that before. Acupuncture without the needles, right? I love it. Because I did acupuncture. A lot of people have amazing benefits from acupuncture, and I think it's an incredible tool. Unfortunately, at the beginning of my journey, even before I knew it was Lyme, I did acupuncture quite a bit for my pain, and it didn't help. But that does not mean I do not believe in it and that I don't think that it works. Yeah, but hey, if we can do something else without needles, I'm all in, right?
And I think you raise an important point that what works for somebody might not work for somebody else. And I wish, you know, I have patients write to me all the time saying, what did you do? And I wish I could give a magic answer more than anything. But there is no set protocol for Lyme. And so, you know, that I always give that caveat that, you know, I can say that integrative manual therapy has been so helpful for me. And for someone else, it might not be. And other things that I have tried were not helpful for me and are great for someone else. So it's all about figuring out, working with a Lyme literate physician and figuring out what's the best protocol for you, what's best for your body and your situation. Because everybody's body is different in terms of how you respond to an illness, how you respond to treatment. And then every case is different of Lyme disease in terms of how long you went undiagnosed, where it's gone in your body, whether you have co-infections, what other comorbidities you might have. Like, there's just no one set formulation that anybody fits into. Unless maybe you could say like a very early acute case, bullseye rash, caught right away, antibiotics for 3 weeks, and they're doing okay. Like, you know, those are pretty clear-cut cases. But even there are 10 to 20% of those people going on to experience persistent symptoms. So you can't even say that everybody across the board who catches it right away and gets treated right away is going to end up with the same result.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's one of the hardest parts about this disease, is that it's not just a, you take this pill or you do this therapy and you're going to get well. And that is the frustrating part. And like you, people reach out to me every day. What did you do to get well? I'm happy to share, right? But that doesn't mean go out and run and do what I did, because right, it may not work. You know, we need to be very smart, very conscious with the finances that we spend on this journey, right? We really need to allocate them properly for us, because our bodies don't react the same. And so that's one of the things I love about being able to do this podcast, is having each guest share what worked for them, right? Mm-hmm. So the listeners can say, you know what, I'm going to research this, or I'm going to look into that, or I've heard a lot about this. And a lot of times that's where you can pick some of your information from, right? And kind of come up with your own thing, you know. And there are some great kind of preset protocols out there. You know, Dr. Rawls has one, the Cowden protocol, you know, the Buhner. There's a lot of those, and I think they're fabulous. But again, I think there's so many other things that we need to kind of tie into it, as far as, you know, your diet, like you mentioned, and even just the mindset, the detoxing, your environmental toxin, like just so much of it. So there's just not one, it's like the Lyme umbrella, right? Like, there's so many things that fall underneath it that really need to be tackled in this journey.
Yes. And it's unfortunately so different for everybody. But as you start to figure that out for yourself, that's really how you can start to get well. And it just takes a little trial and error to figure out what works for you. And one of the things I've written about for GLA is that that doesn't stay the same over time. So my initial protocol is very different than it is now and is ever changing. You know, even small supplements, I'm changing, you know, tweaking here and there. And so I can't even say, oh, it was exactly this medication at this dosage, you know, that did it. Like, that's what did it at that time. And it's ever changing.
Yeah. And because our bodies tell us, right, what it wants, what it needs. And I tell people a lot of times when they're like, well, you know, I already spent all this amount of money with this doctor and all these supplements and it didn't work, or I only took it for a month, my body didn't like it. Don't get rid of them, because there's probably going to be a point in your journey when your body wants that and needs it, and it's going to make an effect on it. So, you know, just like thinking that, when you mentioned earlier, you know, when we start to see the remission door and then we take a step back, words, right? You didn't lose all your progress that you made. Just like when we're buying these different tinctures and supplements throughout our journey, you're not just throwing money down the toilet, right? It may not be your ticket right now, but my gosh, don't get rid of it. Save it, because it may just be your ticket later. So that's always important to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, gosh, I'm just so happy that you are well. And like me, you've learned your body. And that truly, is that just not one of the biggest blessings of this whole journey? I mean, there's many, right? We create incredible friendships, being able to do the things that we do to give back to the community. I mean, there's no better way to fill your heart, right? But the biggest thing is just we really get in touch with our body. And so I'm assuming that Lyme for you was a blessing in many ways as well.
It really has been. And someone really put it in perspective for me after reading my book and said, you know, it might have been nice to be a ski instructor, but it really would have been a shame if you had been a ski instructor and had not had this journey and had not written this book and had not, you know, been able to advocate for so many people. And just that reframing was really something for me of wow, you know, as you said, that is a blessing within itself. Like, yeah, sure, that would have been nice, you know, to get to do that. But I feel like I ended up doing exactly what I was meant to be doing.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I completely agree. Yes, we just don't often see it when we're supposed to, or right, but the timing is everything, and our paths are lined out for us. Oftentimes, we don't understand them, right? So always take something good and positive from anything and everything out there that seems bad and that are negatives or struggles. Find that positivity that can come from them. And you have, and I love that. And so now I want to take the last little bit of the show to kind of talk about some of those things that you're doing. And I really want to, if you don't mind, start with the writing. So you have this Writing to Heal program, and tell us about it, because it sounds fascinating to me.
Yes, I love it. I always say it to my students, writing, I teach lots of creative writing classes, but Writing to Heal is my baby. And that is because, you know, we're looking at how you can use writing as a tool, as a therapeutic tool to work through adversity and trauma. And it has absolutely helped me to work through my own experiences. Writing has been a very therapeutic tool for me. And I love now having the opportunity to share it with others and help others tell their story, not only to get their story out of themselves, but also to reflect on it and process on it and see how much growth can happen from that and how much resilience and just how empowering it can be for someone to claim their narrative in that way. And so I started teaching. I got into Writing to Heal when I was a senior in college. Actually, I was a creative writing major, and my senior essay, which was a long form 75-page essay, was about the last year of my grandmother's life. And I really saw what it was then to write through grief, to write through a difficult experience, was it what it was to honor someone on the page, you know, to honor a story on the page, and also to process through something on the page. And I, you know, just started to study Writing to Heal and looked into different memoirs and worked with my advisor on that. she got interested in it as well. She started teaching a Writing to Heal class. And then I, of course, went on my whole Lyme healing journey then, unbeknownst to me that that was going to be happening. And then eventually began writing about it and seeing what it was to share that journey with others, and ultimately ended up going back to my alma mater and teaching a Writing to Heal class there for five winters, five J terms, January terms, and then started teaching it at Grub Street Creative Writing Center in Boston. And began with a Writing to Heal 1 program, a 6-week program, an 8-week program, a 10-week program, and ultimately, and then started building a Writing to Heal 2, an advanced Writing to Heal. And students were wanting to keep taking it because they were really bonding with each other and felt like they had shared so much with each other, and they wanted to keep going with the process, and they wanted to keep going with the community. So ultimately, we designed this Writing to Heal program. It's a 6-month application-based program. And so students stay together in the same community from September to May, and we work over 3 different phases. And people, as I said, are working through any type of adversity or trauma. It does not have to be medical. There are many different types of things. And sometimes people come in and say, well, I don't know if it technically counts as trauma. So I like to use that word carefully because there's big T, there's little T. And people are there just to write about an experience or experiences that have affected them and that they want to work through. And they find that others in the community are doing the same, and they really bond over that.
I love that. And that, you know, you say somebody comes to you and says, I don't know that this is trauma. It just kind of triggered something in my mind that I wanted to just kind of share with the listeners. You know, oftentimes we'll hear people's journey, right, through this Lyme disease. And we think, oh my gosh, that person was, how did they ever make it? You know, I'm so glad I'm not that bad. Mm. Or vice versa. You're the one who's really bad or bedridden, and you see somebody else talk about their journey and they worked through their journey. They, you know, was able to have a life during their journey. I think it's so important to never mitigate or negate anything that we're going through personally, right? Our journey is our journey. And if it's a journey, it's tough. You know, most journeys aren't easy. What you want is never easy to get, right? And we want wellness, and it's not always easy to get that. And so just keep that in mind. Don't judge others when people are going through their journey or sharing to help others, and never diminish what you're going through. If you're going through a journey, it's a tough journey, right? And you are strong, and you can make it through that. And I love that all sorts of healing can be done through the writing, like that you just mentioned. You know, I think journaling through this journey can be a big piece to it as well, kind of expressing it. And I know in the past I've had some guests on that were like, not really sure I'm ready to share my journey, right? Because I don't want to kind of go back to where I was, right? Is that going to trigger something in me? And every single one of them, after having them on my show and them sharing their journey, they actually said to me, I think that was my final piece, because it was so empowering and healing to just be able to speak it out loud for others to hear, that it actually healed them as kind of like their final ticket to their journey. So it's such an important piece of it. Just like we mentioned, there's so many layers to it. So I love, love, love that you do that. And, you know, as listeners know, we'll have links in your description for all the things that we talked about. If people want to reach out, check out the programs and all of that as well. And then I don't want to forget, so your book, One Tick Stopped the Clock, again, love that title. 10% of all proceeds go to the GLA. And can they get it on Amazon, or where can they get your book?
You can get it at your local bookstore or on Amazon or bookshop.org. Anywhere that you buy books, you can get it.
Awesome. And so what else did I miss? What else do we want to touch on?
I think just the most important message I want to give to people is a message of hope. And to just say, you know, for me, how desperate I felt at times, and how alone I felt, and how I've just felt like it's never, ever going to get better. And it's gotten so much better than I ever could have imagined. And so I just want to give that to people and just know that it really can get better. And that one tick did stop my clock for so long. And it's running now. And it's running at a different pace than I imagined. And that it what is, quote, normal. And that's just fine. And so I just, you know, I want to validate people in that journey and really just give them hope that it really can get better.
Well, your story did just that. And I appreciate you sharing with me and for what you're doing for others in the community and, you know, especially within the Lyme disease world, because we've got to have our voices heard, right? And oftentimes we're too sick to share our voice. So Jennifer, it sounds like you've been an amazing voice for us. And for me personally, I appreciate that because I have a loud voice, but I can't reach everyone, right? So it takes a village. We need a lot of us doing this work. Yes. So I appreciate that. And again, listeners, all the information to reach out to Jennifer to see any of the programs that she's involved in will be in the description of this episode. Jennifer, thank you so, so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Tanya. I appreciate you as well and appreciate you having me on.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.